If you're of a certain age, you might remember a woman named Jean Dixon. She was the most famous psychic in America from the 1960s until her death in 1997. Jean's predictions for celebrities, royals, and American politicians were often on the covers of supermarket tabloids. She was a prolific author and a frequent guest on television talk shows. I'm Joseph Radota. I stumbled across Jean Dixon while I was writing my book about the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. One of Jean's clients was Rosemary Woods, the confidential secretary to President Richard Nixon. At the height of the Watergate scandal, Nixon's personal secretary was turning to Jean Dixon to ask, "What is going to happen next?" After I finished my book, I wanted to learn more about Jean Dixon. I read her books. I consulted the presidential libraries of Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and FDR, and I located a copy of her FBI file in the National Archives. The result is the play you're about to see, or rather, hear, The Jean Dixon Effect. The play is set in Jean Dixon's bedroom in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C. Picture an elegant room with tall ceilings and a massive chandelier. There's an elaborate four-poster bed and a Tiffany lamp on a writing desk. On either side of the marble fireplace are two large paintings, a portrait of a man in glasses wearing a dark suit and tie, and a portrait of a cat. From Last 5% Media, welcome to The Jean Dixon Effect.
In 1952, I had a vision. I was praying before the statue of the Virgin Mary in the Cathedral of St. Matthew in Washington, D.C. An image of the White House appeared in front of me with the year 1960 hovering over it. Dark clouds spread from the numbers and dripped onto the building like frosting on a cake. I saw a man standing there. He was young, tall, blue-eyed, with brown hair. An inner voice told me he was a Democrat, and that the president elected in 1960 would meet with a violent death while in office, and then the vision went away. I shared this vision with Parade magazine, which published a version of it in 1956. In January 1963, I said JFK would be dead within the year, and on November 22nd, that very day, I said, "This is the day it will happen." I saw a shroud over the White House, a very dark shroud, and 1.5 hours later, the president was dead. And things just took off from there. Every newspaper in the world, it seemed, wanted to interview the woman who had predicted the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And there were so many radio and television interviews and speaking engagements. Then they begged me to write a book, of course, about my life and experiences. And I said absolutely, because I knew a book from me would be so helpful to so many people. People like you. I was one of 10 children. My parents were German immigrants, Frank Pinkert and Emma von Graf. We lived in Wisconsin until I was about 6, and then we moved to San Bernardino, California. My father ran a grocery store and a gas station there, and we had oranges in the yard and tangerines. There were no tangerine trees in Germany, or in Wisconsin for that matter. It was God's plan to send Frank and Emma Pinkert to California. Oh, and tangerines. There was so much talent in my family. My sister Maxine went on to become a famous aviatrix, and my brother Ernie, he was a football star at USC. They won the Rose Bowl twice, and he was All-American. He was so handsome. After USC, Ernie played for the Boston Braves and the Washington Redskins. I don't see why those names upset anyone. I was taught to ride a horse by American Indians myself. I had a life that was something right out of the movies. I was homeschooled by a European governess, received voice and polo lessons from someone well acquainted with a certain member of the British royal family, and learned astrology from a Jesuit priest. There was something remarkable about me, even from an early age. Something mysterious and wonderful. One day I asked my mother if I could play with the letter trimmed in black. Well, she just looked at me. There wasn't any such letter trimmed in black, not anywhere in the house. Then, shortly afterwards, a letter arrived from Germany, a letter trimmed in black, announcing a relative had died. So my mother, wishing to get to the bottom of it, took me to a gypsy camp, and a fortune teller looked at my palms. And you know what she said? "Oh, my. Oh, my," she said. "Right there. Do you see? Your daughter's hands have both a Star of David and a half moon. Look closely. These palms appear on the earth just once in a thousand years." Once in a thousand years. The gypsy gave me this crystal ball. When other little girls were playing with dolls, I was playing with my crystal ball. Let's see. This will be the most dramatic year ever in American political history. There will be a great danger, a near tragedy, betrayals in more than one camp, and a neck-and-neck race right down to the wire. President Gerald Ford's danger months are April and July. I sense that a northern city will be the setting for an attempt on his life. As I meditated on President Ford's horoscope, I received vibrations of evil coming from several directions. They're the same kind of vibrations I received just before Robert Kennedy was shot, although at that time I tuned in to only one channel of evil. Barbara Mandrell will bring the Mandrell sisters back to television. Barbara Streisand will be disappointed in an artistic endeavor which does not measure up to her standards. And an illness or accident will strike someone close to Vanna White. It's a gift. I brought this crystal ball with me to Washington during the war. My husband, James L. Dixon, Jimmy, was a dollar-a-year man to help with the war effort. Oh, he was too old to serve in battle, so he worked in Washington at a salary of just $1 a year. He gave up his car dealership in San Bernardino out of patriotism. Of course, there weren't any cars to sell at the time, not with a war going on. I'd bring my crystal ball with me to parties and give predictions to the servicemen who were about to go overseas. They wanted to know, will my brother win next year's championship game? Will my ma's blueberry crumble take the prize at the state fair? Will my dad finally retire from the mine, healthy and safe? So I told their fortunes. It gave them such comfort to know that the Lord was looking out for the people they were going to leave behind. A sense of peace would just wash over them. I could see it in their faces. Of course, I knew for some of these soldiers and sailors, the future wasn't bright at all. Not every prediction in my crystal ball was meant to be shared. And then, one day, I got a call from the White House. The president himself, Mr. Roosevelt, wanted to meet me. He had heard about my predictions at these parties around town. I wore this coat when I went to see him. Do you see the buttons? They're shaped like little crystal balls. I designed it myself. It's a gift. Oh, and now my hat. A lady can't be seen in public without a hat. My visit to the Oval Office was on a Thursday in November 1944. As I was preparing to leave for the White House, I got to my front door and realized I had forgotten my crystal ball. So I returned to my bedroom, put the crystal ball into my purse, and, oh my, it looked like I was sneaking a bomb into the Oval Office in the middle of the war. So I covered my purse with a silk scarf, one of my own designs, and hopped into a taxi. It was 11 in the morning when I arrived at the White House. I gave my name to the guard, who said I was expected, and I walked up the driveway to the West Wing and was ushered right into the Oval Office. And there was President Roosevelt sitting behind that massive desk. the clairvoyant herself, Mrs. Jean Dixon. That's how he greeted me. And then he wheeled around his desk and came toward me. Mr. President! Oh, I picked up his vibrations. I could feel a wave of loneliness reaching out to me. He made small talk about the weather, and I knew I had to break the ice. Mr. President, it is wise to seek guidance sometimes when one has a question. He told me he had been thinking about his decisions regarding Russia, and asked me what I had heard in my discussions. He carefully refrained from using the word readings or psychic. He pressed me. What have you heard, Mrs. Dixon? What have you heard? I don't have to look into my crystal ball or touch your hand to answer that, I said. Since I was 14 years old, I have been seeing visions that America, France, England, and Germany must be allies before we will have real world peace. Germany should be on our side, helping to conquer Russia, not the other way around. He asked me if we would remain allies with Russia, and I told him my vision showed otherwise. But we will become allies later on, against Red China, I said. And he laughed. China is not red. We'll have no trouble with China. But I told him, I saw that China will go communist and become our biggest trouble. He said I was remarkable. Remarkable. And that he wished Mrs. Roosevelt were there to meet me. I picked up a few vibrations about Eleanor Roosevelt. They were very curious. Shame on you. He asked me how much time he had to finish the work he must do, and then I touched his hand. I tried to avoid answering him directly, but he was insistent. 6 months or less, Mr. President. I could sense that he felt a premonition of his own death. He was only seeking confirmation from me. He was a very sick man. He died that April. The National Observer later conducted an investigation and interviewed Grace Tully, FDR secretary, who said she didn't make either of my appointments. The Secret Service, the National Archives, the Roosevelt Library, none of them had any record of my visits. But Estelle Friedrichs, his girl Friday, later recalled that on the night of my first visit to the Oval Office, after I had gone, FDR said to her, "If you only knew who I saw today, you wouldn't believe it." And 30 years later, Elliot Roosevelt, the president's son, he confirmed he knew me quite well and that I had predicted two things for him and both came true. And Elliot said his father spoke of me on several occasions and that I had been to the White House. How much, I wonder, is lost to history because it isn't in the records? When I set out to write my first book, I had a problem. I needed to tell that story of my visit with President Roosevelt during the war, but we had both agreed there would be no record of the meeting. I wanted it that way, so the doors wouldn't be closed to me, so that anyone, just as FDR had done, could reach out to me without fear of publicity. If you ask me a question privately, I'm not going to discuss it with someone else. I believe a confidence is a confidence. How on earth could I build up the reputation I have if I talked? And then I put it in my book, page 46. A Gift of Prophecy, the Phenomenal Jean Dixon, as told to Ruth Montgomery. Ruth Montgomery. I'll get to her later. 3 million copies, 21 printings, and a special edition published by the Catholic Digest Book Club. It just flew off the shelves. A Gift of Prophecy, the Phenomenal Jean Dixon. It's such a beautiful book. It has a message for everyone. I just love book signings. They've opened the doors. I love meeting new people. Once in New York, I sold 2,500 books in one day. It was terrific. And today, I'm being filmed by a television team from West Berlin. I had a feeling about that wall. Oh, hello. How many do you want this morning? One or two? Read it before you give it away to your sister. It's a beautiful book. Hello. Are all three of these for you? Because if you buy more than one book, as many do, you get a complimentary gift bag to carry them in. Hello, dear. Your brother-in-law should take the job at the sawmill. The pay is good, and he'll love the work. And he'll get a new nickname, thumbs. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm expected at the Pentagon bookstore for a second book signing, and I must get going. My assistant, Alice, arranged lunch. A turkey sandwich in the car. I get the equivalent of 17 extra working days each year by such shortcuts as eating turkey sandwiches. You can only do a great many things if you have discipline. Discipline gives true freedom. It is a wonderful thing. I have a schedule and I keep to it. You have to have a tight schedule or you won't get anything done. All those smiling faces today. They come up to me and God lets me help them. It takes a weight from their shoulders. They feel better for it. I've never seen anything like it. It's a gift. After the war, Jimmy and I more or less flipped a coin to decide whether we would go back to California and sell automobiles or stay in Washington and sell real estate. We decided to stay. We set up the James L. Dixon Realty Office, where Jimmy and I made our living. We would get to the office by 7 each morning, and he would work until 7 most nights. And from the beginning, I took an active part. I have a God-given talent for real estate, and it would be going against his will if I did anything less than the best I could for any client in a real estate contract. I love this painting of Jimmy. It's by a Russian artist, Alexander Yarin. He was born in Imperial Russia, fled to Shanghai, survived the Japanese occupation, and escaped with his wife and 3 children just 3 months before Shanghai fell to the Chinese communists. As I predicted, Mr. Yarin settled in Washington and was very popular. So many prominent people sat for their portraits. Senators, cabinet members, Mamie Eisenhower, and my Jimmy. It gives me such comfort to know every night that Jimmy is right there, down the hall, in his own bedroom, and that every morning when I wake up, I'll find that single red rose he has placed on my pillow. At 3:14 in the morning on July 14, 1952, while I was lying in bed, I had a vision. I could feel a physical motion against the mattress to my left side. I turned, facing east, and as I did so, I saw the outlines of a snake. I could feel its powerful little body twisting down the side, turning the corner, and pausing at the foot of the bed. I could feel its head nudging between my ankles. I could feel its body growing larger as it wrapped itself around my legs and hips. I was not frightened. I knew instinctively that I was about to be shown how little I knew about life. By this time, the snake was as big around as a man's arm. I could see its head, but I couldn't see any eyes. It turned toward the east, and then at me, as if to say that I, too, must look to the east for God's wisdom and guidance. And then it was gone. I knew at that very moment that I had God's protection, for the steady gaze of the reptile was permeated with love, goodness, strength, and knowledge, and a sense of peace coursed through my being. I put that vision into my first book, A Gift of Prophecy, The Phenomenal Jean Dixon, as told to... Never mind. Then, after it was published, I began receiving numerous complaints about my description of this particular vision, the one with the snake. I got letters pointing out that God would never have used a snake as a messenger because the snake is, usually, considered Satan's tool. And other people wrote me because they were upset about what they called a Freudian connection. This one said the serpent appeared to be a metaphor for a man's private parts. Oh, some people are just sick. You see, the symbols in my visions, they never change. But it is possible that at the time I misunderstood what those symbols are intended to mean. My first book did very well, but sales started to drop off a bit, so my publisher said it was time to put out another book. I took the opportunity to revisit that particular night. At 3:14 in the morning of July 14, 1952, while I was lying in bed, I had a vision. I sensed something moving toward the foot of my bed. I saw its presence. It was Satan at my bedside, showing himself to me as a serpent. It attempted to come closer, but I was protected from all harm to body or soul by the presence of God's protective love. The serpent turned to me and our eyes met, and when I gazed deeply into its eyes, it vanished in a ray of purple light. Yes, that's how it happened. Page 160 of my new book, Jean Dixon, My Life and Prophecies, as told to Renee Nordbergen. I'll get to him later. I received 200,000 letters and telephone calls on top of that. Every week I'd get long-distance calls from newspapermen, television commentators, radio hosts, all asking if it was true that I had just predicted some hurricane or earthquake or some other catastrophe. Switchboards were jammed all over the country, people calling in a panic, asking if I had predicted a spaceship would land and kidnap every child between the ages of 10 and 15. I had to get an unlisted telephone number. Sightseeing buses passed by my home and office constantly. I could hear the loudspeakers. On your right, the home of Jean Dixon. Tourists would hover outside St. Matthew's Cathedral and ask me for an autograph after Sunday Mass. May I have your program, dear? Blessings, Jean Dixon. Did you see that? A wave of peace just washed over her face. It's a gift. People write me all the time. This one is addressed simply to Jean Dixon, Washington, D.C. The post office got it right to me. No problem at all. Thousands of letters are addressed just exactly the same way. Sometimes they enclose money, but I send it back. I don't keep a dime. Jimmy and I do just fine in real estate, what with our rental properties and all. And what I have is a gift from God. If I were to take money for it, then I would lose the gift. You know, dealing with my correspondence, very expensive. I had to hire two secretaries to help me keep up. I do not charge a lecture fee, but I do ask that my traveling expenses and those of my secretary be paid, as my husband will not permit me to travel alone. In lieu of a fee, I welcome contributions to my foundation, Children to Children Incorporated. Although the amount is left to the discretion of the organization I am addressing, I feel a minimum contribution of $800 is reasonable. All contributions are tax deductible. This letter from Mrs. Bessie Redmer of Franklin Park, Illinois. Please send me a recipe for my book, Favorite Recipes of the Stars Cookbook. Mrs. Redmer wrote me several times. She just wouldn't give up. I answered, Dear Mrs. Redmer, thank you for your gracious patience with me in the matter of a recipe. I had your previous letters at hand to answer, but unfortunately, my desk is piled high with other letters, all demanding to be answered first. However, here it is, my Jean Dixon special recipe, and I hope you like it. First, recite upon awakening the 23rd Psalm. Add a soupçon of the Lord's Prayer, 8 hours of work, 1 hour of good works to others, whomsoever, 1 weekly visit with clergy, 1 application of the golden rule daily, more as required, and 1 mustard seed of faith. Sprinkle with meditation and prayer to taste. Stir ingredients to vibrations in tune with God's own universe and serve, without chilling, in a grace cup of gratitude and thanksgiving. In my opinion, Mrs. Redmer, this is the very finest daily meal anyone could have. What is more, if everyone did have this kind of food every day, this old world would never again have any indigestion. Blessings, Jean Dixon. All foods are associated with the zodiac because the cosmic rays from the sun give life to plants and animals. That's one way astrology works into all aspects of our lives. For example, with astrology, you can predict many things about a person, diagnose allergies, and even tell what foods are good or bad for that person. Here's where the matter of your own body chemistry enters the picture. As you get older, your body chemistry changes, and you must change your routine and diet to be in harmony with the universe. Yes, I'm speaking to you, dear. For example, coffee, tea, or chocolate interfere with my powers of concentration. And my friend, Adele Fletcher, she suffers severe headaches from eating seafood. When she eliminated that food from her diet, she felt much better. Adele Fletcher. I'll get to her later. My mother taught me how to make palachinka. It's German. Can you all say it with me? Palachinka. Palachinka. Doesn't it sound delicious? You get pancakes and fill them with whatever you have around. Chip beef or ground beef, flavored with dried parsley and dust on the outside with a little paprika. And then you roll it up. And you place your green vegetables on either side like flying buttresses on a great cathedral. A cathedral for worshipping the Lord. Except this cathedral is made with chip beef. You can find this and other recipes in Jean Dixon's Astrological Cookbook, How to Select and Prepare Foods Astrologically for Their Harmonizing Effect on Your Mind and Body. I'll be signing them in the lobby right after the show. I give so many speeches to community organizations, church clubs, business groups, too, like the National Association of Kentucky Fried Chicken Franchise Owners. It's important to me to use these opportunities to help people. Can we have the lights up, please? Oh, well, look at you. Thank you for coming. Such a prosperous-looking group. And so young. Could you please stand? Yes, you. Don't be afraid, my dear. Oh, I'm channeling. You will have a health scare in the family. And it will be frightening at first, but then you will have very good news. Possibly triplets. You might want to repaint the guest room a nice shade of pink. Oh, hello. I'm getting your channel. Oh, and another channel. It's the channel of your poodle. Your poodle loves you with all her heart and will be a source of great joy for years to come. In time, the chronic diarrhea will pass. But I wouldn't put in the new carpeting just yet. Oh, you, do this for me, dear. Close your eyes, and then I'll pick up your channel. That's right. Perfect. Now, we all have our own individual channels. I like to look into people's love life. Now, you see, everybody has a favorite boy. You have a favorite, too. I've meditated on you, and I've meditated on him, and he's saying, it's time that we walk up the aisle. Next year, you're going to be married. Congratulations. Oh. Will you invite me to your wedding? Give me plenty of notice. I'm a very busy person. Oh, now we're at the point in my presentation where we join in song. Lift your voices to the heavens with me. Let the Lord hear all of us. A hand. Oh, that was wonderful. The angels heard you. Some of them joined us. Could you feel it? Could you feel it? Isn't that the most wonderful song? I could listen to that song every day. It lifts the soul, doesn't it? I mean, yes, it does. It may also help with the digestion. One day, I wrote a letter to another patriotic American, J. Edgar Hoover. I indicated that one of our tenants in Washington was publishing some sort of communist newsletter, and Mr. Hoover invited me to come see him. Oh, Mr. Hoover, it is such an honor to meet you. I just want to share with you my deep appreciation for all you do to save this country from the scourge of crime and drugs. And welfare. Welfare is another problem we need to solve. Welfare is ruining this country. I feel very strongly that these problems are interfering with our democracy and should be labeled the Seven Horsemen of the United States Apocalypse. Crime, drugs, welfare, radical youth, public schools, energy shortages, and senior citizens. Perhaps not in that order. Mr. Hoover, I give a great many speeches all over this country, and I'm being asked all the time for my predictions on such matters as social unrest, civil rights, and relations with the Soviets. Would it be possible to receive, on a confidential basis, material which I might utilize in my columns and speeches? An extremely confidential basis? He directed the Bureau to furnish me with appropriate material on a confidential basis from which I could extract information for my speeches and columns. Today, more than ever before, the communists are planning to take us over by creating dissension among our young people. I'm telling you, at the rate things are going, the communists will take us over through our weaknesses inside. We are not going to be strong enough to stand against the many forces that are working against America by doing nothing. We need to reestablish belief in the things that have made this country the greatest on earth. Unless we unite under our current government, I see massive civil disorders led by self-styled champions of minority groups, including the leader of the Black Panthers, who will be exposed to be on the payroll of Moscow. And then this telegram arrived. I was scheduled to make a speech in Greenwood, Mississippi, sponsored by the local Chamber of Commerce and the local newspaper, and then I received this wire saying, "We of the Greenwood Movement," that is a radical organization, "would like you to know that your speech is to be before a completely segregated group from a Mrs. W.F. Lee, the wife of a colored minister in Greenwood. Reverend Lee, he's a militant." And see right here, a notation that verification of delivery is to be made. A clear threat to my personal safety. Mr. Dixon, my husband, is always worried about my safety, and on this particular occasion, my secretary couldn't travel with me, so I asked Mr. Hoover. Would it be possible for an FBI agent, or two, to accompany me to my speech in Mississippi? The way he recoiled in horror, you'd think I was asking him if I could borrow his toothbrush. "I'm afraid that won't be possible," he said. "If you feel your personal safety is in any way endangered, you must make that fact known to the local police department." And then he buzzed his secretary and he was gone, off to lunch with Mr. Tolson. Oh, I picked up his vibrations, too. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Ooh, that's a lovely sweater. Hoover dropped me like a hot rock. It's amazing, isn't it? How people are so willing to take from you, but once you ask for something for yourself, suddenly you're out in the alley, just garbage waiting to be picked up by the trash man. And then I had a vision that in March 1972, just a few months before the Watergate break-in, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover would die in his upstairs bedroom, surrounded by his collection of Persian rugs and French statues. Did I give him a heads up? Well, not every prediction in my crystal ball was meant to be shared. In 1962, I think they get the picture. In 1962, a day after Mr. Nixon was defeated for governor in California and told a press conference that it would be his last campaign, I forecast that Mr. Nixon's most important role in politics for his country was still ahead of him, that his work had barely started. I predicted Nixon's election in 1968. Halfway through his first term, I wrote that the nation was presently divided, but I predicted Richard Nixon will be a unifying force. A wiretapping scandal will involve Richard Nixon, which will show him as a sincere man and will help his public image. It's a gift. I shared this prediction with my friend Rosemary Woods, Nixon's confidential secretary, for whom I had done so many readings and consultations. She invited me to the Oval Office one day to meet with President Nixon personally. Oh, I am so sorry. I look absolutely windblown, Mr. President. I was delayed by a group of revolutionaries who were out there with a cup gathering money to get people out of jail. So I gathered them together, because I think you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And they recognized me. Oh, there's Jean Dixon! They all wanted my autograph. So I asked what they were doing, and I talked to them for about 45 minutes, and I gave them a $10 bill to get one person out of jail. That's what I did. And I told them we were going to form a new youth group, and this group is going to support the President of the United States because LBJ is no longer the president, and Mr. Nixon wants to have peace. I can remember having my first international interview. It was 1949, and one of the questions was, can I name a young man that God is going to make great? So I meditated on it for a fortnight, and I got your channel. Because it was God's plan for you to be President of the United States. The Lord intended Richard Nixon to be great. President Nixon told me he appreciated my patriotism. It isn't patriotism, Mr. Nixon. It's love. A few months later, five men broke into the Democratic Committee offices on the sixth floor of the Watergate. I called my friend, Rosemary Woods, and said I wanted to help. I offered to make points in my columns and in my speeches, say some things defending the president, but in a spiritual way. President Nixon was not involved in the Watergate break-in, but I predict his enemies will try to hang wiretapping charges on him. They will fail. Moreover, Mr. Nixon will successfully push new laws against wiretapping to protect the privacy of all Americans. But I never heard back from my friend Rose, or from anyone else at the White House. But I did hear from Milton Bradley. They wanted to put my name on a board game. Gene Dixon's Game of Destiny. And then the Franklin Mint called, and they issued a series of spiritual and very tasteful decorative plates. And these little bronze medals commemorating the 10th anniversary of my foundation, Children to Children Incorporated. That's me on one side, and on the back, two children and a cornucopia and a dove of peace overhead aiming right down at those children with its sharp little beak. It's not as frightening as it sounds. And someone had the wonderful idea of issuing a line of gold-toned Gene Dixon crucifixes and astrological mood rings. And a toy company came out with a line of astrological dolls. And another outfit released the Gene Dixon Horoscope Predictor, where I predict your future in 10 categories, from health to career, and harness heavenly indicators to reveal your most promising personal relationships. You just put in your birthday. Or the birthday of your cat. Oh, the most remarkable cat I've ever known was Mike. People often ask me whether cats have extrasensory perception. Mike here, he definitely had ESP, especially with children. Once we were at a children's party, and a young boy, 12 years old, asked Mike to help him choose between attending school here in the States or abroad. Mike's answer, through me, of course, was, go to school in the United States. Europe is not advisable. You will have a bad accident. The boy shrugged off Mike's warning and went to school in Switzerland. Sure enough, he had a terrible skiing accident. I could not have been more pleased. Mike came to us quite mysteriously. One day in Washington, a well-dressed woman rang our doorbell. She told me she had considered drowning her kitten, but instead she reached down into the pocket of her coat and gently brought out this tiny creature, and she walked off. I showed the kitten to Jimmy. He was muttering and fuming about the nerve of some people, and this is the ugliest cat I've ever seen. But Jimmy's gentle hands betrayed his heart, and by the time the first saucer of milk was poured, we were ready to baptize the kitten with a name. The season was Christmas. I was thinking of the three wise men who came bearing gifts. They were learned men of their day who heard the prophets foretelling the birth of a special child. The prophet said the time of the event would be marked by the appearance of a great star. The Magi had known of astronomy and followed the star to find the child. That neatly sums up my philosophy, too. I read the clues written in the stars, listen to the prophets, and worship only one God. So I named our kitten Mike, the Magic Cat, after the Magi, and after a friend of ours from Orange County named Mike. Mike had his own door to come and go, and one day, when he was about 6 months old, he disappeared. I was frantic. I searched everywhere we could think of, but there was no sign of him. I had his picture inserted in a newspaper ad so no one could mistake him. 3 days later, a telephone call came. A voice on the line said, "This is the White House. We have your cat." He was at the northwest gate of the White House. We brought Mike home with great rejoicing. I called up my friend Evelyn Peyton Gordon, the social editor of the Washington Daily News, and she wrote about Mike's adventure at the White House, and Mike became famous. Producers at television shows regularly called wanting to interview Mike the Magic Cat. People sent him clothes, and soon he had a very large wardrobe. Sometimes he wore farmer's overalls with a big straw hat, sometimes a dinner jacket with a top hat. I never knew a cat would sit still for all that dressing up. You can read all about Mike, the magic cat, in Jean Dixon's Do Cats Have ESP, which did somewhat better than Jean Dixon's Horoscopes for Dogs. The cat book sold better than the dog book. I'm not sure why. These things are just hard to predict. Fans painted pictures of Mike and sent them to me all the time, but this one was my favorite.
Lot 63, a portrait of Mike, the magic cat. We will begin the bidding at $300. Sold!
Mike lived a long and happy life. Mike would sit right there, watching me as I worked. My predictions were in the Star twice a year, and my syndicated column ran in papers all over America. California police will have another confrontation with Zsa Zsa Gabor, but she'll turn her trouble into dollars by teaming with a comedy writer for a new book or a nightclub act. Arnold Schwarzenegger will consider a career in politics, but will experience some disappointments. The IRS itself will be confused by the new tax laws. Another law will be passed by the Congress, which will clarify our tax code perfectly. In the past 2 years, Playboy magazine has fallen from the high standards that Hugh Hefner set for it. But he will now reverse this trend, and Playboy will return to its previously high standards. A taller, slimmer Gary Coleman will enliven the entertainment scene. Just one more. Donald and Ivana Trump will meet in divorce court before the year is over. It's a gift. Donald's a Gemini. That's the Latin word for twins. And those born under this sign reflect the two-sided nature of the starry twins. They are great talkers with very definite opinions. Geminis do not like confining relationships. They resist being tied down to one spot or one person. They need a social environment with people coming and going. A Gemini is long on cleverness and short on responsibility. They don't handle routine matters very well. Yes, Donald's definitely a Gemini. Life with a Gemini? It's a three-ring circus.
With her annual predictions in such magazines as The Star, there's a copy of it right here, my next guest has helped me both plan my life and kill time on supermarket checkout lines. One of the world's foremost psychics, please welcome Jean Dixon.
When I did the David Letterman show, his producer said I shouldn't, but I gave David a copy of Jean Dixon, Yesterday, Today, and Forever. It tells about the eternal life that lives in your body and soul, why you do the things the way you do, and why I do the things I do, and why all of the audience does what they do. He appreciated it very much, especially when he found out the book would explain all about Paul Schaefer, too. David wanted me to get right onto the predictions for the Academy Awards. I've meditated on it, I said to him, but I'm not going to tell you the winner. It would be wrong for me to say it on television and disappoint so many hard-working actors out there in Hollywood. Actors mean well, but they just cannot take disappointment.
Jean Dixon, ladies and gentlemen.
I did all the television talk shows. Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas. Oh, I loved being back in Hollywood. It took me back so many years to the Life of Christ pageant in what would eventually become the Hollywood Bowl, where I appeared in the role of Mary Magdalene.
Alleluia.
Thank you, dear. But Mary stood without at the sepulchre weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, and seeth two angels in white sitting, the one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. And they say unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? She saith unto them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And when she had thus said, she turned herself back and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. And Jesus saith unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? She, supposing him to be the gardener, saith unto him, Sir, if thou have borne him hence, tell me where thou hast laid him, and I will take him away. And Jesus saith unto her, Mary. She turned herself and saith unto him, Master. It's a gift. I was even on an episode of The Golden Girls. I appeared in season 1, episode 13. Betty White asked me if I could tell her what the future holds, and I said, sure. Brooke Shields and Lady Di will star together in a Broadway musical comedy. And then she interrupted me and said she wanted to know what the future holds for her and her fiancé. I looked up to the heavens and said, I'm not getting a clear picture on that. And then Rue McClanahan ushered me out the door in such a hurry. Everyone said I was wonderful. It was so much fun, but I think they should have given me a few more lines. Those people who say there are no small parts, only small actors, those people are completely wrong. I met Ronald Reagan when he was still an actor. He loved football, you know, and he was visiting at my brother's house in Beverly Hills, California. This was before Ron, he said to call him Ron, got into politics. I was sitting with him, and I shook hands with him, and I said, Mr. Reagan, you know something? God has given you a magnificent destiny. One day you are going to be President of the United States. That's exactly what I said to him. And then Ronald Reagan became the President of the United States. And Nancy Reagan and I, two girls from Southern California, finding our way in Washington, D.C. It was our destiny to become close friends. So I called her right up. Hello, this is Jean Dixon from Mrs. Reagan. Yes, I'll hold. Gotcha. Oh, well, that would be fine. Thank you. She's a very busy woman. Yes, Mrs. Jean Dixon from Mrs. Reagan. Yes, I called the other day, but I didn't hear back. Can I confirm you have my correct number? Oh, well, you have it then. Thanks so much. Ronald Reagan told a reporter he read his Jean Dixon horoscope every day, right before his daily national security briefing. Hello, Mrs. Jean Dixon from Mrs. Reagan. I'd prefer to hold. Well, perhaps if I just popped in for a few minutes. I'm only a few blocks away, and it's no trouble at all. I understand, but my messages to her just don't seem to be getting through. I see. Well, may I leave my home number? Well, thank you. I never heard from Mrs. Reagan. I learned later she was working with Joan Quigley, an astrologer from San Francisco. Very rich, very social, very blonde. She had Nancy Reagan tied around her finger, scheduling the president's major trips, policy announcements, this and that. She didn't give Mrs. Reagan 1 minute of solace or comfort. Just created endless more things for her to worry about. Around the clock, week after week. Except for the time Joan Quigley wasn't available because her mother had died unexpectedly. Unexpectedly. Well, that's a word you want to hear from your personal clairvoyant. It's one thing to be ignored, but it's quite another to be under attack, which brings me to Adele Fletcher. She was an editor for Photoplay magazine, which covered mostly movie stars, when I hired her to help me write my first book. The manuscript took 18 months to complete. Then two men from the publishing house spent 2 days reading through the manuscript and obtaining my initials on each page. Then they took the manuscript back to New York to prepare it for publication. The next day I placed a call. I told them I changed my mind, and they may not publish my manuscript. I had no choice. Adele Fletcher procrastinated in writing the manuscript, failed to interview the right people, and inaccurately transcribed the information I had given to her. And then she filed a lawsuit, demanding royalties. So I countersued for $500,000, alleging Miss Fletcher had engaged in a series of acts designed to harass, intimidate, and harm me, and I had become physically ill as a result. A jury awarded her 5% of my royalties. Outrageous! Which brings me to Ruth Montgomery, my collaborator on A Gift of Prophecy, the phenomenal Jean Dixon. After that book came out, she attended seminars on meditation and dream analysis, and soon thereafter discovered she could produce automatic writing. She claimed that when she held a pencil lightly above a sheet of paper, the guides, as she called them, the guides directed the pencil. Then she suddenly discovered she had psychic powers and started doing readings and offering her own predictions and writing books as if my gift, a gift from God, could be transferred to her by osmosis. Which brings me to René Neurbergen. I worked with him for nearly a year on my second book, Jean Dixon, My Life and Prophecies. René Neurbergen. He said I was quite a woman on the surface, but a prophet? This phenomenon is not new, he wrote. Christ foresaw its emergence almost 2,000 years ago when he spoke about the end time. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many and shall show great signs and wonders and shall deceive the very elect. He claimed much of my initial fame rested on my counseling sessions with President Roosevelt and that my account of that meeting was pure fantasy. And then he dug up all sorts of predictions from my columns. Fidel Castro will lose power in Cuba and will be physically removed from the island. Jackie Kennedy will never remarry. Richard Nixon will never resign. Supermarket tabloid prophecy.
Phony?
Or psychic.
A glorified fortune.
The idol has feet of clay.
A fraud.
And a charlatan. A vision is not a newsreel. It is very sacred. And divine. A vision is given to me, and at God's timing, not mine. A vision can be in color or in black and white. Sometimes it has music and voices. Always it is strengthening, never depleting. The visions usually come early in the morning, and I can feel them coming on 3 days in advance. They make me feel like touching everyone in the world with a wand to make them see God's wondrous power. From my first encounter with that gypsy back in San Bernardino, I began to realize that I had a specific purpose in life. I received a precious gift, and I dedicated my life to using it wisely. I foretold the deaths of Carol Lombard, Marilyn Monroe, Mahatma Gandhi, and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I predicted Harry Truman would defeat Thomas E. Dewey, the Russians would launch Sputnik, and the creation of Pakistan. The same spirit that worked through Isaiah and John the Baptist also works through me. It's a gift. One day, while I was praying in St. Matthew's Cathedral in Washington, I had a vision. It was a new hospital. The Jean Dixon Medical Center, the most advanced children's research medical center in the world. The most advanced and sophisticated laboratories and computers. A dome at the center of the complex will contain a magnificent chapel for all faiths. The exterior will be completely covered in stained glass, crowned with a soaring spire and topped off by an eternal flame. It was very tasteful. My foundation, Children to Children Incorporated, was offered 200 acres of choice land in Virginia, worth $2 million. Jimmy and I were in the process of raising the funds to build that hospital.
Lot 296, A Portrait of James L. Dixon by Alexander Yaron. Oil on canvas in a gilt frame, signed and dated 1964 on the upper right.
Jimmy would place a red rose on my pillow every morning. Then one morning I woke up and there wasn't a rose on my pillow. I went down the hall and into his bedroom and there he was. He looked so peaceful.
Sold for $200.
In 1988, a mathematician named John Allen Paulos wrote a book, Innumeracy, Mathematical Illiteracy and Its Consequences. It was a bestseller. He said he wanted to find out why so many well-educated people understood so little about mathematics, and he looked at all sorts of things, fad diets, miracle cures, lotteries, stock scams, and precognition. The ability to predict the future. He said that supermarket tabloids never provide an end-of-the-year scorecard. telling you how many predictions from their psychics came true. And the few predictions that do come true are widely reported, so they are widely remembered. And the overwhelming number of incorrect predictions, they are quickly forgotten. All that we remember is the few times a prediction turned out to be true. He gave this phenomenon a name. He called it the Jean Dixon Effect. My entire life's work, condensed to three words, the Jean Dixon Effect. And it's still on my Wikipedia page.
Lot 369, a Napoleon III gilt and mother of pearl decorated cast iron bed with polychrome enameled bedposts.
This bed originally belonged to Empress Eugenie, wife of Napoleon III. She was the last empress of France. She met her husband at the Élysée Palace, and he immediately tried to seduce her, but she resisted. Napoleon demanded to know the road to her heart. "Through the chapel, sire," she replied. They were wed 4 years later. She was an advocate of equality for women. She got the Ministry of National Education to award the first diploma in its history to a woman. She lived to be 94. She had it all. I know envy is one of the seven deadly sins, but I do envy Empress Eugenie for one thing. She has an asteroid named after her. An asteroid! If you're wondering where the Jean Dixon asteroid is, so am I.
Sold for $4,500 to the telephone bidder from New Orleans.
I had a heart attack at my home in Washington, and they took me to Sibley Hospital to recover in a very nice room from which I could see the tip of the Washington Monument. And I had another heart attack there. And I joined my Jimmy. Newspapers around the world ran my obituary. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the San Francisco Chronicle, papers in London, Paris, Tokyo, and Beijing. They said I predicted the future, that I was consulted by presidents, first ladies, and royalty. It was all true, but I also gave hope to servicemen, grocery store clerks, housewives, and nurses. All the way back to those parties during the war. I gave people comfort. I gave them hope. Everyone wanted to know my last words. I'll tell you. I said, I knew this would happen. I never had a chance to speak with that mathematician who wrote about me, John Allen Paulos. Well, I did send him a message, telepathically. I believe in things that cannot be mathematically proven. But that's true of everyone, I think. The natural world is beautiful. The forests, the deserts, the oceans. People are beautiful. Music is beautiful. I believe this beauty is rooted in a supreme goodness, and I believe that goodness is rooted in God. Mathematicians believe some things are true and some things are false, and that they can use mathematics to tell the difference. But I believe if you try to prove everything, you lose something very important. You lose your ability to see beauty. It was noon on a Sunday in July 2009 at the Sloan's and Kenyon Auctioneers in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Sale 44. Property from the estate of celebrity clairvoyant Jean Dixon, Washington, D.C. The room was packed.
Sold.
And the phones were jammed with bidders from all over the world.
Sold.
From Europe, from Japan, from South America. There were hundreds of lots, including my religious figures,
sold.
My Russian icons, my evening gowns, my silver poncho.
Sold.
6 fur muffs for the coldest of winter mornings, and more than 80 hats.
Sold.
Well, a lady mustn't be seen in public without a hat. The final lot was my crystal ball. A gypsy gave it to me when I was a child. She said I was special, something that came along just once in 1,000 years. When other little girls were playing with dolls, I was playing with my crystal ball.
Sold.
Adjusted for inflation, it sold for $14,000. Now that's what I call the Jean Dixon effect.
The Gene Dixon Effect is presented by Last 5% Media. The role of Gene Dixon was played by Valerie Leonard. The auctioneer was Nigel Reed, both courtesy of SAG-AFTRA. Rob Olmsted directed and edited this production. Blair Hardman is our sound engineer, and Caitlin Bruce is our production manager. Special thanks to Zone Recording, B Street Theater, the Baltimore Playwrights Festival, Barbara Hoganson, Elizabeth Nunziato, Helen Hedman, Rick Hammerly, John Allen Paulos, and Scott Taylor. To learn more about the Gene Dixon Effect, like us on Facebook at Gene Dixon Effect or follow us on Twitter at Gene Dixon Says.